Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of Operations Group at the National Training Center, Fort Irwin, California. My name is Captain Seth Rivetta, and I will be hosting this podcast today. The Gauntlet brings you best practices from the Army's experts in combined arms operations.
Today, we will be sharing a podcast made by the Scorpion Team, one of our combined arms battalion trainers, called Left of the Bang, a Scorpion Team Desert Dialogue. This mini-series highlights how to best prepare each warfighting function for some of the challenges of the National Training Center.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Major Stephen Piles. Today, I have with me two guests here that come from the medical field of sustainment warfighting function. We are focusing on the medical world.
Hi, Captain Shelby Hammernick. I've been here for about 18 months.
I'm Mass Sergeant Jason Martin. I've been here since August of 2022.
I really appreciate everyone here for coming today. So the purpose of our podcast today is to continue our discussion on those critical areas by warfighting function to enable unit preparation for their respective upcoming National Training Center deployment. Can you discuss with the audience the Role 1 capabilities?
Absolutely. So basically, the Role 1 is comprised of four sections. You have the headquarters, treatment, evacuation, and the combat medic section. So the headquarters section has your medo, the platoon leader, the platoon sergeant, and they provide the C2, they manage maintenance and evac, and the force health protection and health service support plan for the battalion. The treatment squad forms the battalion aid station, and that consists of the surgeon, the PA, and medics. They have the capacity to do emergency medical treatment and advanced trauma management, sick call and triage, and some form of combat operational stress control. They are able to split into treatment teams, and they consist of the tactical combat medical care sets, the TCMC sets. They have two MTOD with the capacity to treat 40 disease non-battle injury and 40 trauma casualties each. That's if the class 8 is fully stocked. They also have the chemical agent treatment and chemical agent decon sets, which can both treat 60 seaborne casualties each. The evac section, depending on the unit or the type of brigade combat team, whether it's striker or armor, consists of medics and the medevac platforms. So the striker medical platoons have four 1133s or medical evacuation vehicles, 12 medics, and they have the capacity to support four litter or six ambulatory. And the armor medical platoons consist of six 113s, and they can support four litter or 10 ambulatory. Their function is to evacuate casualties from the CCP to the Role 1 and resupply Class 8 to the maneuver companies. The evac sections sometimes are pushed forward to the line companies to provide quicker evacuation from the CCP or point of injury to the Role 1. Lastly is the combat medic section, which are the line medics pushed forward to the companies, and they're integrated to provide triage and emergency medical treatment. That's basically what the Role 1 is there to do, to clear the battlefield of casualties, whether that's evacuation to the next level of care or returning those casualties back to the force.
I appreciate you laying out those capabilities here. Just before we go into the trends, where is the Role 1 normally located?
That depends. A lot of times what we see is the Role 1 is co-located with the CTCP, Company Trains Command Post, or within the vicinity of.
Perfect. So we have a lot of robust capability that the brigade combat teams bring to help evacuate casualties and treat casualties in order to get personnel back into the fight or at least to the next level of care. So as we go into the trends, what trends are you seeing from training units on the employment of the Role 1?
Hey, thanks, sir, for asking that. And you actually asked a great question about the proximity of where the Role 1's at comparably to the CTCP. And doctrinally, that's correct. However, we need to be cognizant that the medical platoon is a specialty platoon. And for that, NTC trends overall, they have a natural constraint during their communications or comms. That's both within the platform and then throughout the battalion wide. And so primarily they try to stick around the proximity of the CTCP just to utilize those internal capabilities to communicate. However, whether it be leveraging their OA254 platforms or their JPCP and having them up across the board, those are two things that we see historically throughout, you know, at least six out of the eight rotations that I've been, that has been like a natural deficit. And so to kind of go into the weeds a little bit, to start with the JPCP platforms, first and foremost, doing validation exercises, whether it be at the company level, platoon level, or even when they're training up for, you know, their future CTC rotations at the battalion level, those are where their money is made. All right. Long story short, when you get out of the box, you're going to lose comms no matter what. right? And so it's important to not only know the platforms that you're communicating with, but also your pace plans or redundancies so you can communicate across the battlefield, right? And then secondarily, optimizing the channels between your platoon to battalion to brigade, primarily mission authority and launch authority. Too often during our middle of our AARs, where we're discussing like, well, how do we communicate this the most effectively? And this is mostly the battalion meadow, brigade meadows, talking through the pieces between, all right, so they get the nine line or a bridge formatting through their JPCP, it's communicated through brigade, and then it's almost a liaison, if you will, needs to be embedded between brigade aviation and then the overall higher headquarters, right? And too often do we see a degrade in when it reaches up to brigade or them being communicated to the aviation task force.
What trends are you seeing from the medical officer's employment of their role within the role one and the role within the battalion staff based off your experience?
So it's a dual hat for the meadow. So they serve as both a staff officer and a platoon leader. So we've seen Meadows be very successful in balancing both, where they plug in to the talk, they get updates, and they update the medical concept of support based on the situation. We've seen Meadows very timid to leave the Role 1 footprint and plug into the talk, where they're primarily focused on that platoon leader hat. So the Meadow has a significant role in MDMP during the planning to ensure that they're within a good supporting distance to the FLOT. They have distributed their resources appropriately, whether that's what we say flexing their medevac platforms to a company if they are expected a high casualty rate. We've seen Meadows be successful in managing both, and really it takes support from battalion leadership, the XO sergeant majors, to make a holistic and effective health service support plan to help support the Meadow, because the CASEVAC operations, casualty collection point at the company levels, mass cal operations, Seaburn operations, they require support outside of the medical platoon. So having the ability to reach out for help and utilize those key battalion leadership has been one of the trends that the platoon has been successful if they leverage those resources.
And 2-4 brings on a great point. I understand how difficult it is to be a Meadow. That being trained initially for 2 to 4 weeks tops and then being thrown in the fight and say, hey, listen, learn all this, right? While managing a property that you've never touched, while trying to develop a rapport with your platoon sergeant, all while trying to be a staff officer. And so those trends that she touched upon, it's really trying to find a fine balance. I mean, it's a tri-cap that they have, being an engaged leader with the platoon, right? Being a liaison, taking care of property, talking with that XO, talking with the HHC commander to leverage whatever they need to make sure that medical concept of support is prioritized, right? And then being a staff officer, which is not as emphasized in their training domain when they're getting spun up to be a medical officer as you may think it is, right? And so thinking about S1 and managing those casualty estimates and thinking about S2 and being like, all right, what's the most likely course of action that we're going to gain casualties and how can we optimize or split our treatment A teams and B teams to work and to serve the battalion the best way? And then looking at the three component, not only being a part of that MDMP process, but also making sure that you can chime in, be well before the car. Too often do we see our Meadows and the platoon sergeants kind of sharpshooting things like right at the end of the car. And I'm telling you, that time is dedicated to the battalion XO or that battalion commander and sergeant major to look into the details and seeing what gaps. That is not the time where you're poking holes in their planner constraints, right? And so being a vocal part. And then also leveraging the S4 and S6. And so whether or not if those log packs are really going to work, what they're going to request, if they're going to get it back, or if they're going to use the buzzword of ambulance backhauls, right? Which we, you know, in the sustainment or medical community love to state when we're dropping off casualties at the brigade AXPs, right? But how realistic is that? Especially when you're calling nine lines and misreports and like, is that really going to be the priority on the back end of dropping off of casualties? And then also just to kind of wrap it up full circle is like, those communications, whether it be your battalion S6 or brigade, and I'm not even talking about launch authority. I'm talking about like those retrans sites. So you can talk outside when you're navigating throughout the box.
Perfect. Great conversations and great discussions on the trends that everyone's seeing here from the medical officer as well as to the role one capabilities. So as you guys are coaches and you have this role of not only observing but coaching and help train the rotational units as they come here to NTC, what are your training recommendations or what have you coached from this role one perspective?
So in reference to the Meadows involvement and developing that health service support and medical concept of support is to be involved in planning. So they do come during LTP and they're successful integrating themselves into planning in a cell, in a comfortable environment. But during rotations, when the plan changes, what we coach is how are you going to get plugged into the talk? How are you going to get updated information so that you're positioned for the next battle period to best support the battalion? And as I stated previously, not every Meadow thinks to do that. A lot of times it's comfortable at the roll one or electronic. If you have communication to get those updates is a way, but actually plugging in physically, going to the talk, just as you would during LTP or other MDMP processes.
Absolutely. Yeah. So real talk, sir. I mean, it comes down to like personnel and equipment. And I understand a lot of units come through here. They're like 70%. And when we, you know, dig down the details, it's sometimes even less than that. And so like my counterpart has stated, like personnel is crucial, but also creating force multipliers. That starts at the sergeant major level. And then that works through the first sergeants and platoon sergeants throughout it all. And so creating force multipliers, meaning like not medics as drivers. I know it's important, being a prior medic that has driven plenty of platforms that to get those miles in, right? But if you're trying to optimize your medical concept support, it'd probably be more beneficial to put them in places where they can save lives instead of driving a 113 or driving a striker. And then secondarily, really leveraging that platoon sergeant and having that platoon sergeant trained and also present at the LTP. So understanding that the platoon sergeant is a liaison that serves as a forcing function to support that Meadow in all the different domains. You know, we can state TC7-22.7 and occupying all the pillars of readiness and leadership, training management, operations, program management, but also serving as that engaged leader that supports them. So when they're trying to develop a plan of action or a battle rhythm where they're going to be a staff officer, that they can coach up those PAs, they can coach up those battalion surgeons, they can create force multipliers within their platoon so their treatment NCO can cover down for them while they're coaching up their evac NCOs, all while those evac NCOs are training up to be the next treatment NCOs and so on and so forth. It's a cyclical cycle because we never have enough bodies. Now we gotta do the most for the most.
Great points and great discussions here. And one thing I wanted to inject as a former battalion operations officer as well as a battalion executive officer, when it comes to collaboration, I've always used to tell my staff, look, I'm 100 miles an hour. Okay, every day I'm trying to solve and try to prevent problems. Never be timid, as we said earlier, to, you know, inject yourself into the battle rhythm when it comes to the planning side and also when it comes to the execution side as well. When it comes to the planning side, it's very easy to just wait to be told to come inside to do MDMP. Your running estimate is constantly running every day. It is okay to talk to the ATC commander, to talk to the S3 or talk to the XO to say, look, these are the things that we are seeing. These are the priorities. These are the friction points and what we have, because that will always facilitate planning. And then when it comes to the actual execution side, things like you say, like the combined arms rehearsal, when the moment at your LD, ensuring that the plan that you have put in place is executing the way that you want it to be to help facilitate that vision that the commander has to say.
You hit the nail on the head, sir. I mean, like, so how you eloquently put, it's creating the dialogue. It allows that feedback, that bottom-up refinement. So not only do all your staff knows and you're trying to execute the battalion commander or commander's vision and intent, but all the soldiers that you're serving with know the plan and know how to execute it properly.
Outstanding. So as we get near the end of our great discussion here with the medical trends, especially the role one capabilities and trends that we have seen and what we're coaching, looking back and based off your experience, if you were deploying to the National Training Center within the next 90 days, what is one thing that you will focus on that you would like to communicate with the force?
It also is a trend we see is lack of Class 8. So that would be something in addition to my COMO platforms is getting the appropriate amount of Class 8 to treat both real world and notional casualties. Because unfortunately, if units come and it's more than just this med platoon's issue, it could be a brigade level, they don't come with appropriate Class 8, and that really is an injustice for those medics not being able to fully treat utilizing the medical supplies, and it really doesn't test that resupply and sustainment enterprise. To give the medics the best bang for their buck, and in Class 8, I will include and especially include C-burn sets. Going through some C-burn rehearsals, having adequate Class 8 on hand.
I only bring this up because we just had the opportunity to sit in an LPD with Colonel Antle, talking about the overall enterprise, but how we need to refocus and emphasize certain things to make sure that the Army-wide can be a more lethal force, if you will, right? For me, it goes down to rehearsals. I only have two rotations as an RTU coming through here. And between the platoon exercises, the company exercises, the battalion exercises, the CALFEX, the gunneries, right? Those are all great attempts. But how are we feeding it towards the CTC and embedding it in all warfighting functions, right? That goes right back to LTP. We have this great resource here at the CTC where they can come and then do their own rehearsal, whether it be through maps or, you know, eventually down the line, augmented reality or virtual reality or whatever the case is. That's their attempt to get it right. And then rehoning it, whether it be every 2 weeks, every month, whatever they identified last week or last month, guess what? We're going to get after this. And that's how you get after those most likely course of actions. And that's how you get after the training. Because rehearsals pay dividends for the soldiers that are doing the fighting and executing the commander's intent.
And ladies and gentlemen, what he was talking about, Colonel Retired Antle, he recently developed a series on surviving the command posts and main command post survivability, becoming more agile and as well as mobile under the constant threat in the operating environment. We had a great LPD with him that focused a lot on the previous wars. So thank you very much for highlighting that critical resource.
Just some closing thoughts, because we see a lot of great high-performing NCOs and officers, both in the medical platoon. And I'm not going to say that they don't take a look at doctrine. Aside from our experiences, we are trained as OCs to rely on doctrine, meet the RTU in the middle so they can develop their own solution. You know, to go down the gamut at ATP 4-02, which is Army Health Service Support, -02.2 medevac evac, or 0.4 the medical platoon, or health service planning for 0.55. All those are a wealth of knowledge that I understand that the black and white text is dry. But everything that you're putting into every rotation is being reflected and being rewritten and optimized so we can fit the near peer threat that we have and then the future OE that we're going to operate in. And so dig into the details, take the time, and however the doctrine applies to your organization or task org, make sure that you're utilizing those resources so you're benefiting your platoon and your organization as a whole.
Do you have any other resources you would like to recommend to the listeners?
Yes, sir. So a lot of those references, again, utilizing Army Publishing Directorate, but outside of just doctrine, using social media. So there's a Medical Service Corps Leader Development page on Facebook, and they do provide references to doctrine. They speak on current events, trends, and a lot of relevant information for especially medos and leaders to benefit from. Additionally, on Instagram, they have the Box Wizard, and I've seen an up-and-coming Life Be Hard in the Desert, where they reference doctrine with memes, and it provides some very relevant NTC, CTC-related stuff that goes on with doctrinal references. And lastly, just going to the Combined Arms Center website, lots of lessons learned and white pages and resources there.
As always, our Observer Coach trainers are here to assist units. I invite you to look at our Mill Suite page for the latest products from Operations Group and subscribe to Operations Group Tech Talks on YouTube for short lessons learned on successful techniques. Thank you for listening to Thinking Inside the Box, The Gauntlet, the podcast of Operations Group at the National Training Center.